Back in the 2000s, three companies dominated American telecom: AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint. Sprint was a legacy giant and one of the biggest in the world, with as many as 55 million customers. But despite their size, Sprint would lose billions and be driven to the edge of bankruptcy. Sprint would end up being bailed out by T-Mobile, who themselves were fighting against bankruptcy in the early 2010s. But while T-Mobile staged one of the biggest corporate comebacks in history, Sprint would be completely forgotten. How did this happen? Sprint had a bigger brand, more customers, and way more money. How did Sprint die? Sprint made many, many big bets in the wrong places, but there was one that set off a long chain of dominoes, and it was championed by their CEO, Gary Forsey. He was trying to solve a problem: the mass exodus of customers. No one was happy with the telecom industry, but Sprint was particularly bad. Forsey had a solution, or at least what he thought was a solution. Sprint was going to merge with Nextel, a gigantic wireless provider. They could add new options for customers, absorb the revenue from the millions of wireless customers, and the many government contracts. Telecom and wireless seemed like a great fit, but this was the start of a long and painful road for Sprint. Merging two gigantic companies is always tough. Often one is absorbed into another, with one being the more dominant brand. This happened with AT&T and DirecTV and the HP Compaq mergers. But Sprint was a bit different. They were going to merge equally. Both companies were valued equally, and their shareholders each hold approximately 50% of the new company. So, what went wrong? The two companies did a 50-50 split in everything: management teams, executives, two headquarters. They even tried to merge the two brands together with the Sprint logo and the Nextel colors. It was an identity crisis and an internal crisis. The two company cultures didn't fit at all, and the merging process was long and painful. Thousands of jobs were cut, and underperforming stores were shut down. Dan Hess, the Sprint CEO after Forsey, reflected that, in 2020 hindsight, the Nextel merger was a bad idea. This is kind of what you learn in business school. A merger of equals isn't a good thing. Bloomberg ranked the deal as one of the worst mergers of the past 5 years. While AT&T and Verizon were taking ground, Sprint was on internal damage control, and at this time, Forsey was forced out of his role as CEO, replaced by Hess. Yet, even putting the merger problems aside, it had distracted Sprint from a bigger issue. Customers were still leaving. The experience at Sprint was still terrible. In fact, it had gotten worse. After the merger, Sprint's customer satisfaction rating had dropped to 61, the worst in the industry. The service was unreliable, with dropped calls, incorrect billing, and terrible customer support. This made for a lot of high-maintenance customers who often called to complain. So, what did Sprint do? Well, they fired them. That's right, fired their customers. They fired 1,000 customers. They told them, "The number of inquiries you have made to us during this time has led us to determine that we are unable to meet your current wireless needs." Generously, Sprint said it wouldn't charge them the early termination fee, which could often be up to $200. How generous! Naturally, this sparked outrage, and the media caught on to that quickly. Keep in mind, this was also around the time Sprint was dragged into court over their early cancellation fees and ordered to pay out over $70 million to customers. We were last in customer satisfaction, last in 2007, 2008, and 2009, said Hess. People absolutely hated Sprint, but this was just one of their many problems. Amidst all of this, something else happened. Something would change the trajectory of Sprint forever.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone. But what we're going to do is get rid of all these buttons and just make a giant screen. A giant screen.
We all know how the iPhone changed the world, but what many don't know is Apple made a major deal in the background.
And so we went back and forth for a few months, and we finally settled for a 5-year exclusive deal at AT&T.
AT&T bet big on the iPhone. In my opinion, this was one of AT&T's best business moves ever. They secured an exclusive 5-year deal with Apple. If you wanted an iPhone, you had to get it through AT&T. Think about how powerful that is in retrospect. It was a huge gamble that paid off big time. Customers began leaving in droves for the iPhone, and this left Sprint in a dangerous position. They had to react, and they weren't the only ones. Verizon, in response, went all in on Android with Motorola and their own Droid brand. Not as popular as the iPhone, but it was a competitor for sure. You've got to almost put the iPhone, to be fair, in a separate category, Sprint CEO Hess said. The Apple brand and that device has done so well, it's like comparing someone to Michael Jordan. Hess knew Sprint had to respond, but maybe they should have thought about it a bit more. AT&T offered the iPhone, Verizon offered the Droid, Sprint offered the Palm Pre. If you don't know anything about this phone, I don't blame you. It was a webOS phone, aka a Linux-based phone, and to be honest, it was way ahead of its time. It allowed for amazing multitasking and felt very intuitive. But unfortunately, being ahead of your time usually means having the restraints of your time. It was quite fragile, with the sliding screen tending to come loose. Not to mention, it had a very small number of apps. Naturally, the Palm Pre didn't take off like Sprint hoped, but that wasn't even the end of their problems. They had also bet on the wrong infrastructure. As a first mover in 4G, they invested in WiMAX, but over time, the industry moved towards another technology, LTE. It had better device compatibility, better coverage, and faster speeds, and soon became the universal standard. Sprint, rushing to be the first in this technology, teamed up with Clearwire to build a 4G network, but they turned out to be an unreliable partner. Much time was wasted, and soon, their competitors caught up and chose the right network, LTE. Sometimes being a first mover is crucial, like AT&T and Apple. Other times, it just means you're the first loser, like Sprint. But there was, however, one silver lining in all of this. Hess had been working tirelessly to improve their customer support and service. I took those numbers every week to the head of network, or head of marketing, or head of billing, and I said, own that number to get it down. To his credit, that's exactly what happened. In 2007, they were the worst in the industry, but by 2011, they had gradually risen to the top. They were even awarded the most improved US company in overall customer satisfaction across 43 industries. But there's still something to keep in mind. Most improved doesn't always mean great. The telecom industry as a whole was hated for their terrible service. Confusing plans, long contracts, terrible cancellation fees. If you compare anything to a dumpster fire, it'll look good by comparison. Sprint's customer service wasn't a strength, it was just less of a disaster. Sprint was still losing the war, so they had to make some big plays. After the failure of the Palm Pre, let's just say Sprint was eager to get in on Apple's golden goose. Dan Hess reportedly said that the biggest reason people leave Sprint is because it doesn't sell the iPhone. So, finally being able to support the iPhone after 5 years was a major win for Sprint, but it came with a huge cost. In 2011, the two companies made a deal. We don't know exactly what went down, but Sprint agreed to spend $20 billion on iPhones over 4 years. $20 billion. When shareholders heard about this, they were furious. The company's already tightening profit margins had suddenly fell off a cliff thanks to this deal. So Dan Hess took a pay cut and gave back performance payments he received earlier, which together passed $3 million. They now had the iPhone, but there was still the issue of 4G. Sprint had to catch up, and unfortunately, that didn't mean WiMAX. But if they weren't bad enough already, things were about to get much worse for Sprint. The industry was about to see what real customer service was, but it wasn't from Sprint.
The industry wants you to be confused. They want the way you purchase to be tough. How about this stat? 46% of Americans say they have gone in and made a wireless decision and gone home and regretted it. This is a higher remorse rate by a factor of 33% than the used car industry.
T-Mobile's new CEO, Don Ledger, had come out swinging with their new Un-carrier strategy. No long-term contracts, no cancellation fees, cheap plans, good customer service. T-Mobile was in last place of the four, and most assumed they were done for. But unlike Sprint, T-Mobile was undergoing a true revolution which allowed them to quickly make up ground. Sprint needed to act fast. They began a massive operation to overhaul their infrastructure to catch up in LTE 4G. They aimed to cover 250 million points of presence with their new network by the end of 2013. To help, Sprint also shut down the Nextel iDEN network. Despite spending billions on the merger, the technology was now old and losing customers. But it was still a vital network for businesses and first responders, so this shutdown stung particularly hard. Nextel went dark overnight, but from Sprint's point of view, it was a necessary evil. They needed the company to boost its new 4G LTE network, which was where the real business was, and their competitors were already well ahead of them. But things weren't going as planned. The replacement and rollout was going much slower than expected. But why? A 4G LTE network uses fiber optic cables to create a backhaul infrastructure. But Sprint didn't have enough fiber cables to build such a massive network across the US. Their competitors had invested in fiber over the past few years, but Sprint hadn't. T-Mobile had actually laid this groundwork years in advance by adding in fiber backhaul to another network before it became LTE. We knew it would be difficult, but it was even more difficult than any of us had anticipated. Unfortunately, there was no playbook. No wireless company in the world had done something so radical and so aggressive in order to build a great network in the end. Sprint's head of network development said, "If there was a silver bullet, we would have found one. We all would like this to go faster." Soon, Sprint scaled their goal down to 200 million points of presence.
With Sprint, you don't get charged extra, you don't slow down, and you get unlimited data, text, and calling to any mobile for only $79.99. The best unlimited plan wins.
LTE soon began rolling out, but it was riddled with issues for customers. Some on the network just had no data available, or bad coverage due to their lackluster backhaul. During this phase of rip and replace, the customer reputation they worked so hard to rebuild was wounded once again. Their profits were falling, their customers were leaving, the Sprint ship was sinking. But then Sprint was thrown a lifeline. In 2013, the Japanese giant SoftBank acquired Sprint for $21.6 billion. They now had a cash injection and deeper pockets to catch up to their rivals, but they were now also under the leadership of SoftBank's famous CEO and billionaire, Masayoshi Son. He had big plans for Sprint, but in retrospect, they might not have been the best for the company. Masayoshi Son was hell-bent on one thing. He saw one way to overcome Sprint's recent failures and weaknesses: merge with T-Mobile. In some ways, it did make sense. The third and fourth biggest teaming up would make it far easier to build a full 4G and soon 5G network. But there was a mountain of issues. The US government had kept a close eye on the telecom industry. With only four real players, fears of poor competition were high, especially with the previous terrible contracts and conditions for customers. In fact, they had just blocked AT&T from acquiring T-Mobile. Sprint's leadership team insisted that it was the wrong move, or at least the wrong move right now, and it wasn't just Sprint's leadership. As Masayoshi Son marched ahead, T-Mobile's parent company, Deutsche Telekom, said the exact same thing, having just experienced a terrible forced breakup between their subsidiary and AT&T. Now wasn't the right time. A former high-ranking Sprint executive explained that, "Our government affairs team made it very clear at the time that it was the wrong move. It never occurred to us that he would not listen." Masayoshi Son was going to get the merger approved one way or another, and to do so, he would win over FCC chairman Tom Wheeler. Sprint executives, with no alternative, reluctantly followed. They suggested he attend a meeting with Wheeler later in the year, and slowly warm him up to the idea of the merger, then get the approval to buy T-Mobile. But Masayoshi Son was impatient. Instead, he scheduled a meeting right away with the FCC chairman in DC. Insiders say that during the meeting, Wheeler was understandably hesitant. He was telling Masa that they just did all this analysis about the AT&T-T-Mobile merger, and unless things have changed in a year, the analysis would be the same. Wheeler was just trying to be helpful. Then Masayoshi-san's true colors came out. He began to argue in a way that wasn't helpful. You could see Masa digging himself into a hole. It was not well played. Wheeler, however, didn't relent. Then San pushed the case to US senators for months, but none of them would budge. So in August of 2014, he gave up on his pursuit of T-Mobile. This was a huge problem. Sprint had spent valuable executive time that they didn't have. Sprint was continuing to lose customers and still hadn't solved the problem. Their stock had also plummeted from $53 in 2005 to just $11 in 2013. They were losing $3.3 billion every year. After the merger failure, Sun admitted, "I was thinking to myself, I made one of the biggest mistakes in my life, which was the misjudgment of the US regulatory environment. We still have the customers, we still have employees, so I have to take care." He had tried to acquire his way out of problems, but that didn't work. Now he had to face them. To ease concerns, Masayoshi-san made an unexpected appearance at Sprint's earnings call. He told investors he remains committed to the historical turnaround at Sprint and doesn't intend to sell it. In August 2014, Dan Hess was replaced as CEO by Marcelo Clore, an entrepreneur but with no carrier experience. Regardless, he was about to take some bold steps. So, what was his big plan?
"Hey, I'm Paul, and I used to ask if you could hear me now with Verizon. Not anymore. I'm with Sprint now, because guess what? It's 2016 and every network is great. In fact, Sprint's reliability is now within 1% of Verizon. And Sprint saves you 50% on most Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile rates. So I switched to Sprint, and millions more have too. Can you hear that?"
Don't let a 1% difference cost you twice as much. Switch to Sprint today.
Sprint's new campaign essentially boiled down to almost as good, within 1%, but much, much cheaper. Half as much as competitors, in fact. They had a spectrum that was underused, so they could afford to offer unlimited plans. "You have to play your assets to your advantage," Clore said. "Our number one asset is our spectrum." And in the short term, it worked. Sprint saw the biggest leap in new monthly customers in 9 years. Their stock price jumped 70%. The message is simple. We are back in the game. We are going to offer the most competitive value for American consumers. But this was a short-term solution. Price cutting is good, but it usually means something else. Cost cutting. Behind the scenes, Sprint was slashing costs left and right. They began relocating radio towers from private property to government locations, which were much cheaper. In truth, despite more customers, they were still losing money. They planned to cut expenses by as much as $2.5 billion in fiscal 2016 to end 6 straight years of losses. Nothing was off the table either. Network expenses, labor costs, admin expenses, anything and everything. "We'll go after everything, including snacks and yogurt cups for employees," said their CFO. Instead of investing in better towers, they began rolling out magic boxes to improve 4G in customers' homes. But it wasn't enough. In 2015, they dropped to fourth place as T-Mobile surpassed them. They also needed to cut costs elsewhere to invest in their network, but they still didn't have enough cash. In 2017, I believe we invested $1.3 billion on our network, while our competitors were investing $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 billion. The quality of our network was 4 times worse than Verizon's, half of T-Mobile's, and even below AT&T. Then once again came Masayoshi-san. He soon turned back to T-Mobile for a merger. Can't teach an old dog new tricks, I guess, but this time it was different. Beforehand, Sprint was the bigger player, but now T-Mobile was in the position of power. When they began talks in 2017, T-Mobile made one thing clear. Their parent company, Deutsche Telekom, would hold the power. This was a huge blow to Sun's pride. Initially, this was a deal breaker as he wanted to control the combined company, but eventually Sun relented. The merger went ahead, and despite several states filing to block it, the merger was approved, primarily because things were so bad at Sprint that the government didn't even see them as a competitor. District Judge Victor Marrero, who allowed the merger, stated, "It is not likely to substantially lessen competition, and that Sprint does not have a sustainable long-term competitive strategy to remain a viable competitor." Sprint merged with T-Mobile for $26 billion in 2020, and the Sprint name was retired for good. Sprint had a bad network and missed out big with the iPhone, but that's not why they died. T-Mobile was in the same boat, arguably in a much worse boat than Sprint. It was the decisions and leadership that set one company apart and drove another into the ground. Sprint kept looking for quick, short-term solutions, while T-Mobile looked internally at what was fundamentally wrong with the entire industry and how they could best serve their customers. SoftBank might have briefly saved Sprint, but in reality, they only prolonged the inevitable. If you'd like to learn about how T-Mobile handled the same situation but came out on top, check out this video. But until then, I'm Hari, and I'll see you guys on the next one.